He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And the car industry is still feeling its woes in the chip situation. A blurb this morning on one of my sources said that 90% of the cars eliminated from production over the last month, of the total number that were taken out of production due to the chip shortage, 90% were related to North American plants production as opposed to worldwide plants to production. It just shows us that we're not coming out of this anytime soon, and that is that on that. I had a Volvo V60 for a day recently, and it was a loaner car from an Audi dealer because that was the manager's car, and it was the only car they could lend me to have for the day only because they are doing some more research on a leaking A5 Cabriolet, which has been a problem every time it's rained hard. Water's ended up inside the car, and they can't figure out where it's coming. So they gave me a car, and I was very impressed with it. Jay, you have driven Volvos, several models, I think, including the electric or hybrid or whatever you want to call it. But this car was just a gasoline vehicle, and it too had lane keeping, which I did not get a chance to try because, quite frankly, the controls in the Volvo are not marked with words; they're marked with symbols. And I didn't have the car long enough or drive it long enough to be able to figure out where all the symbols were, other than to make the cruise control work. But the car itself was very comfortable. I liked the dash, the simplicity of the dash layout on the vehicle. I did not figure out how to manually tune the radio so that I could get the station I wanted to get, but I'm finding some of these radios in the newer vehicles without dials that you can actually scroll up and down one station at a time tend to jump over weaker stations because their computer chips or whatever is running them, if they don't have a strong enough signal to warrant thinking that they can send a signal or the radio station strongly through the radio, they seem to avoid it. And that is an annoying feature which may or may not be solvable when you're up in our Northwest Connecticut corner where we broadcast from and where we drive a lot, and we're not near the strong stations that emanate mostly out of urban areas like Hartford, New Haven, and the like. This is FM. Satellite is no problem, as anybody who listens to satellite knows, except for some cases where you're under mountain shadows and that, and the satellite signal is lost.
So, hey, Robin, was this the wagon?
What? This was the wagon, yes. Yep,
interesting.
The wagon.
It's a very good-looking car. Was this
it
the
is a good-looking
model?
Car, and it was a 2021. It already had 38,000 miles on it. It just was a very nice, not only looking car, Jay, as you say, but a very comfortable car to drive. Certainly, as you have said, and we all both have said, the cars of today are built better than ever, and the technology that's in them makes them, in many cases, very appealing, with the exceptions, as I am been noting on a couple of shows, with lane keeping problems and that. I didn't find any major problems with the Volvo, except that I could not diagnose the symbols and some of the controls during my, basically it was a half day use of it. That's that on a Volvo, but Volvo's, oh yes, I want one more comment. Volvo's heading towards electric too, and I don't know whether, Jay, you're pulling back some of your thoughts about how fast we're going to total electric, but I think some of these manufacturers may be short selling themselves if they actually take all their fossil fuel vehicles out of production too early, by which I mean by as early as 2030, because I think there's still going to be people that would like to have a Volvo with a gasoline engine, for instance,
well,
as opposed to what may be a totally electric Volvo line by then, at least what I've been reading.
We'll have to reconvene in 10 years, but I think
we will.
You're I think it's going to go even quicker than we anticipate. That's more quickly.
I think you're right.
And there is, it's interesting, Volvo is actually going public. I didn't even know that they were not a public company. They're owned 100% by Geely.
Geely Motors.
But they are going public in, I don't know, soon. But also their fully electric sub-brand, Polestar, is actually a somewhat independent company from Volvo. And you know, I think in time, I don't know if they're going to spin them off, go in different directions, but there's obviously, I think companies, auto manufacturers, need to really focus on electric vehicles if they want to make a mark. And far, the companies that are doing well in the electric world or doing the best, other than Tesla, are other manufacturers that are solely producing electric vehicles, whether it be Rivian that started selling their truck just a couple weeks ago. Lucid Air just started producing and delivering their first Lucid Air Dream Edition, and it's a very expensive car, but it's a solely electric car manufacturer, and
their range is superb. It's 400 miles or better.
I think
they were going to take a convoy of their delivered vehicles with their new owners on a tour of wherever it was they were doing in San Francisco.
Yep.
To take them around and drive them around for I don't know how many hours. I looked for a, not very hard, I looked for a live Zoom or something like that that might have been broadcasting their deliveries, but I didn't see anything over the weekend, so maybe something will show up later. But you're right, it's a very expensive version of an alternative, and a great alternative probably to the Tesla model. What is it, the biggest Tesla?
The Model S.
And we'll see how they do. But to your point about they're going to be very successful, they certainly are, but they're going to be probably successful, hopefully long-term, but certainly short-term, because the orders are going to outstrip the supply available, I'm sure, for a while. And if the quality is good out of the box, they will be successful, because all you have to do is have your best friend who gets one tell you that this is what you want to get too, if you can afford it. And it's sort of like the Tesla situation.
So
didn't you say
Tesla
last week that Tesla outsold every other European brand in Europe last month or whatever it was?
Yeah, the Model 3 was the best-selling model in Europe in September.
That is a major accomplishment.
It's mind-boggling, actually. I mean, I grew up and lived in Europe for many years. And the Volkswagen Golf was the best-selling car in Europe for many, many years. Europeans were reluctant or more reluctant than we were to buy Japanese cars or American cars and bought mostly European cars, and that's changing very quickly. For an American manufacturer to come out of nowhere, literally, and produce a car and be the number one selling model in all of Europe is pretty mind-boggling. And, you know, and again, Tesla, to keep drinking the Kool-Aid here, look at the deal they've made with Hertz to sell them 100,000 vehicles, and now Hertz is talking about ordering another 100,000 in a deal that they have with Uber, where they would, I guess, provide
Uber drivers. Cars. Fascinating idea.
It's just thinking totally out of the box. I think legacy manufacturers are really in for a rude awakening over the next 10 years.
Okay. I want to move on to car prices, because new cars, last year, Jay, you and I were talking about average new car sale prices in this country were in the low to mid-30s. They sort of climbed up into the mid to upper 30s, and now the latest word is that they're now averaging $42,000.
Yes,
so where
right.
does the $20,000 car land in this particular situation? The $20,000 car in the article I'm reading is apparently slowly but steadily disappearing. But what you can't get anymore for $20,000 or less is anything that's larger than a Chevrolet Sonic, a Honda Civic, not even a Honda Civic in the mid-range, in the mainstream order bank, but one that might have no options on them, even though the technology has crept down to the lowest value cars. But Kia has one right around the Kia Rio hatch for under $20,000. But the list is all these really very small capacity vehicles. You're not going to get mid-sized vehicles anywhere near $20,000 anymore. The Hyundai Sonata used to start, I think the base model used to start in the very low 20s. I'm sure it's not available below $25,000 now. But, you know, the American manufacturers tried to make small vehicles and inexpensive vehicles available to the public, and the public just really didn't buy them in numbers that made them profitable manufacturing segments of their manufacturing base.
Well, let me barge into the conversation.
Go ahead.
And say this. There is a certainly a good reason for Americans not to be wanting to drive these small little Econo boxes.
Safety.
And that's simply because there are a lot of much bigger vehicles. We have millions of trucks and pickup trucks and big SUVs on the road. And the latest crash tests that I was just reading about, it's a new crash test where they broadside the vehicle.
Yeah.
With, I think, a 4,000-pound mass,
yep.
And they crash into this, you know, literally the side of the vehicle. And they did
the whole side, too. It's not just the front door. I saw that same test that you were looking at, and it looked to me like that bar that they were using to crash in the side covered pretty much two-thirds of what I would call the two, the front and rear doors of the vehicles that they were testing it. I think there was, what, SUVs, small SUVs?
Yeah, small SUVs, and the only one that was rated
really
as good was the Mazda CX-5.
Right, correct.
Every other car gets either, you know, somewhat acceptable or mediocre reviews. Now, to the point of a 4,000-pound impact from you know, either
sideways,
your left or your right side, brings me to another safety thing, is that you only get broadsided if you're going through an intersection.
Correct.
And get hit from the side. And I think there's, and I've said this numerous times, there's always a way to, or there's most of the time a way to avoid that, and that's keeping your eyes peeled, left and right.
Right. Granted that these tests are designed to really scare you, but you do look at the angles at which they do these tests, and I remember when they were doing the front corner tests of many of the vehicles, to see how strongly they resisted collapsing, either not just in the straight front-on, head-on collision, but as an angled collision. You just watch the way these cars are designed to crumble. But if you didn't know they were designed to do what they do, you would wonder how people would survive in them. But the crumpling of the cars are designed to crumple at with resistance, I guess you'd call it. And but that side crash test was pretty revealing from the standpoint of only one car really shining in that test, and it was probably not the biggest of the cars either. It just shows you some car manufacturers the ones that didn't test well are going to fix their frames, I'm sure, to come out better the next time. But Nishta had upgraded this test from, I don't know what the old
weight was,
3,000 pounds or something, to a 4,000-pound
ram. 4,100 pounds.
Yeah.
And that reflects the reality of vehicles, to your point, over time, that vehicles are getting heavier and heavier.
Correct.
But,
and that,
you know,
countermands the idea of getting higher miles per gallon by keeping them light, because you can't keep them light and keep them safe.
Right.
Even though the technology in the engine department has gone a long way, and the transmission department has gone a long way to helping mileage go up, the A5 I had for several days a couple of weeks ago was shining in the mileage department. It had a four-cylinder turbo engine in it. It was rated at 24 city, 28 mid, and 32 highway, I think it was. I was easily getting 36 miles a gallon on a steady 50 to 70 mile an hour range on a straight on a road without a lot of stop and go driving. And it had the stop start technology so that if you did get stopped at the stoplight, the engine actually stopped completely while you were briefly stuck at the stoplight. So that all helped. But the Audi was exceeding its sticker rating, and I found that several cars will exceed their sticker ratings if you don't sit there and abuse the drive your driving habits, which, as we all know, if you're sitting in a parking lot going nowhere and your engine is on because you're chatting with somebody for 20 minutes, you're getting 0 miles per gallon, and that all goes to drag down the average miles per gallon, which I think very few people pay attention to. I'm probably one of the only ones that really does.
So if we have a couple more minutes for more safety talk.
Yes.
One thing I would like to say, when you're driving, not only do you want to keep your eyes looking ahead of, you know, looking, or you want to look way ahead and not just the tip of your nose and the tip of
correct.
Your hood, but read the signs. We here in the U.S., the road signs are pretty easy to understand. They're all written in somewhat English.
Somewhat English, I like that, yes.
And all you have to do is read them. And I see it's mind-boggling to see people not able to read the signs and just do, you know, very stupid things that they and put themselves and other people in danger just by not reading the signs.
Well, you're right, and there's a lot of construction, road construction going on. And one of the things I think people need to understand is when they see signage saying road work ahead, you don't know whether the road work ahead is around the first corner you come to after you've seen the first sign, or whether it's a half a mile away around several curves, which is what I've been noting is the case when these tree people who are doing tree cutting along the sides to clear the trees around the electric lines, they often are going to plan on working a mile or maybe more stretch of road a day, and so they put their signs way far away from where they may actually be. So you don't just sit there and go notice the sign, slow down for a bit, and then if you don't see a vehicle very quickly into that area, speed back up, because you can come around another curve and you could come into a line of cars that are stopped without a lot of foresight. And if you don't have your eyes on the road, Jay, as you just recommended all of us do, which is very true, you could be finding yourself doing somewhat of an emergency braking situation. So, yes, pay attention to the signs. And use whatever proper needs you need to use to make sure you're not going, you're over speeding the area where the signage is up.
Yeah, and then one other thing is people are so, it's interesting, and I don't know, Jay, you probably don't have this problem, Robin, I'm not sure, maybe even less than Jay, but people are literally so addicted to their screens that I think that given the amount of screens in cars, et cetera, at this point, there's not a... I just had this with driving behind someone. It's not clear that they're moving between both universes, let's say.
Well, I do find that these screens can be distracting, especially this Volvo screen on the V60. It was a fairly large screen in the center of the car, and in order to change channels on the radio, you had to find the arrows on the screen, which were located below other things on the screen. And to do that, you had to take your eye off the road, even momentarily. And even momentarily is too long,
yes.
As Jay will agree, I'm sure.
I think the Volvo screen is needs improvement. And I know it's improved in the last couple of years, but it's still very, I think, treacherous and dangerous to be using it.
I still agree. I still think knobs still have a place in car designs on dashboards with respect to radios and maybe the heating systems. But that's for another discussion.
Yes, and we agree on that.
Yes, right. Okay.
But and as do I. Is there any, you know, just anything that you can say to people who you basically do live in parallel universes when it comes to this?
I think yes, driving is something you need to take seriously, and you need to commit your full attention to it. And I understand that your eyes are distracted. You need to manage your distractions, whether it's eating a donut, looking at the screen, tuning the radio. When your eyes get off the road, you need to be able to do that in a fraction of a second and come right back to where you're supposed to be looking.
And be attentive about your doing it, and not just doing it once and then not doing it continuously as you're driving from A to B.
How do you practice that?
You don't get distracted, basically.
We're not talking about you.
Allow myself to do it continuously during a trip.
I know, but Robin, you haven't grown up on screens, so what I'm trying to find out is, Jay, how do you break that if you can?
Well, you can put the phone, in the glove compartment or in the center console, but I'm not sure that's a solution because people will go and if they hear it ring, they'll go and get it. I think you just have to train yourself to be looking at the road and focus. I know focus is a tough thing sometimes these days, but...
Hopefully you don't decide to do it after you've had an accident first.
There's no such thing as an accident. They're called crashes.
And I've adopted that. They're called crashes for a reason.
Exactly.
I mean...
We can revisit this.
Okay. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.